Chapter 2. "What is it?" Marcus asked as he heard his manservant Palon calling his name. The prefector was lying on his bunk, a thin treatise on naval tactics held in his hands, though he had read the last page more than a dozen times since Korax had come on board, and not taken in a word of it. He had yet to see the Primarch, a matter that gave him a small measure of regret, but equal relief.
"Commander Brand to see you, Master," Palon informed him.
The youth stepped through the doorway from the main room into the bunk chamber, swathed in the shadow of the legionary behind him. Marcus swiftly hauled himself from the bed and tucked the tail of his shirt into his breeches. He smoothed his hair with a quick hand as Palon stepped aside and ushered Bran into the small bunk room.
"Commander, I am honored," said Marcus, bowing briefly. "I thought you would be busy with other duties."
"I am," said Bran, his expression hard. He glanced at Palon.
"Leave us, please, Palon," said Marcus. "Perhaps you could head to the officer's galley and inquire after my luncheon."
Palon nodded and left them. Bran said nothing until the outer door had hissed open and closed with a dull thud.
"Lord Korax has permitted us 7 hours to search for your fleet," said the commander. "No more than that."
"A vain search, I fear,"
sighed Marcus. He sat down on a low, plain couch and gestured an invitation to Bran to do the same. The commander declined with a shake of the head and a scowl.
"You are also invited to attend the Primarch on the Strategium."
"Invited?" Marcus smiled. "That is most welcome. I have been eager to pass on my regards to Lord Korax since his arrival."
"The dreams, Marcus? Have they stopped?"
Bran loomed over the army officer, arms folded across his massive chest.
"Yes, thankfully. Yes, they have," said Marcus. "The ravens call no more. The fires have burned out in my nightmares."
"That is good,"
said Bran, his expression lightening slightly. He bent one knee so that his face was level with Marcus's.
"It would not be wise to distract Lord Korax with unnecessary concerns."
"Unnecessary concerns? I'm not sure what you mean, Commander."
"Don't mention the dreams when you see the Primarch."
"Well, I wasn't going to blurt it out in front of everyone on the Strategium, if that's what you were thinking," said Marcus, offended by the suggestion. "It is a delicate matter. I understand that."
"More than delicate, Marcus."
Bran's eyes were intent, his expression ferocious.
"There may be something unnatural about those dreams. It is not normal for a man to know what happens to another light years distant."
"Of course there is something abnormal," said Marcus. "It is not natural for a man to have such dreams, but I think Lord Korax is far from natural."
"You still think the Primarch sent the dreams to you? That he somehow called to you across the void to warn of the danger he was in?"
Marcus was unsettled by the note of accusation in Bran's tone.
"Undoubtedly," the Prefector said, standing up. "Perhaps there is something in your Legion conditioning that hardened your minds to his message. I don't know. I am sure Lord Korax will confide in us when he feels the time is right."
"Don't embarrass me, Marcus, not in front of the Primarch," said Bran, betraying the cause of his anger. "He has not inquired deeply as to why we left Deliverance. It may be better that the matter is left to lie in silence."
"Whatever you think best, Commander," said Marcus, holding up a placating hand, worried by the tension in Bran's voice. "I will not raise the matter if you or Lord Korax do not."
"And what of the serf?"
"Who?"
"Your boy, the one that was just here. Can he be trusted, not to flap his tongue?"
"Oh, Palon. He is utterly trustworthy. His family have served the Therian nobility for generations. Loyalty is bred into him, like that blonde hair and flat nose. He attends a prefector of the Therian cohort and understands his place and the necessity of discretion."
"Be sure that he does," said Bran. "For your sake, it is better that there is no rumour flying around at this time. Horus's treachery and the turning of the other legions has made everyone very suspicious. Your dream hints at something strange, something that should not be spoken of."
"I understand," said Marcus,
though he did not. The edgy look in Bran's eyes was something the Prefector had never seen in the expression of a legionary before. If he didn't know better, Marcus would have taken it as a sign of fear.
"We had best not keep Lord Korax waiting,"
said Marcus, stepping past Bran to unhook the dress coat hanging on the wall. He pulled on the heavy coat, adjusted the braiding and epaulets to fall smartly, and nodded towards the door.
After you, Commander.
The strategium was silent, save for the background hum of the surveyor stations and the mechanical chatter of data strip printers. Korax stood behind the command throne. The chair was too small for his massive frame, while his commanders waited behind him on the upper tier, overlooking the strategium. Marcus Valerius stood, with head bowed, beside Bran, dwarfed by his legionary companions. It was a risk to stay in the Istvan system any longer than was absolutely required, and even more of a risk to come so close to Istvan IV, where a large part of Horus's armada was mustering. Yet for all the risk, Korax knew that he owed it to the brave men and women of Therion to look for any survivors. He held little hope, no hope if he was being truthful with himself, but in times such as these it was important that the debt he owed to the Therians was recognized. The Avenger ghosted towards Istvan IV on minimal engine power, nothing more than a smear of background radiation on the screens of the enemy fleet. It was not solely to honor the Therians that Korax dared approach so close. Any intelligence he could gather regarding the capabilities and dispositions of the traitors might prove vital for the war that was to come, as well as his chances of leaving Istvan alive. There were dozens of ships, perhaps even hundreds. They belonged to the Sons of Horus, the Word-Bearers, the World-Eaters, the Iron Warriors, and others who had, for reasons Korax would never understand, turned on the Emperor. He had not seen the like since first coming to the system, when the Raven Guard and the Therians, along with vessels representing the Mechanicum of Mars and others involved with the Great Crusade, had brought compliance to Istvan. He had been sent here by Horus before he had been elevated to War Master. Back then, it had been a request, an invitation even, rather than an order. But to Korax, a word from Horus had been like a command from the Emperor. The Primarch of the Raven Guard had never been on cordial terms with Horus. He had always found him too extravagant, too ready to make displays of power during his conquests. Korax preferred to be understated, to obtain compliance with a minimum of fuss and posturing. Yet, for all he had disliked Horus, Korax had admired him. He had admired his easy camaraderie with those under his command, and had known that Horus was the more accomplished commander over many campaigns, gifted with a rare ability for both the overview and the fine management of details, something that Korax had never quite equaled. Physically, Horus and Korax had proved an even match for each other in their mock duels and wrestling bouts. Such sparring had not created any greater bond between them, as it had done with the other Primarchs, but Korax had never considered the possibility that one day he might have to test his worth against Horus, for real. He had been happy to provide the services of the Raven Guard, to lead the attack secretly against those that held out against compliance, fighting behind enemy lines, attacking shipping like a common pirate to weaken supply lines, while Horus and his legion, they had been the Lunar Wolves back then, had reaped the glory with their eye-catching drop assaults and massed battles. Korax had allowed Horus the plaudits. He had no need for them. The Emperor had told Korax as much on several occasions. The Master of Mankind knew Korax's worth, even if it was not loudly praised. And that was enough for the Saviour of Deliverance. Now Horus's brashness looked like vanity, and his extravagance seemed to be warmongering when viewed through the lens of his treachery. He had teetered on the precipice of self-aggrandizement, and he had dragged many of Korax's gene brothers with him when he had finally fallen. "Quadrant 6 report is in, Lord," announced Controller Nasturi Ephrania, breaking into Korax's thoughts. She was a short, aging woman, a native of Deliverance. Ephrania's skin was deeply wrinkled, her white hair thinning, but her eyes were sharp and intelligent as she bowed over the cluster of screens at the primary surveyor station. Artificial tubing snaked just beneath her skin, pulsing gently from the life-sustaining fluids passing within. Augmetic braces glinted on either side of her neck and along the fingers of her hands as she tapped protocols into a keypad. The strategium controller was dressed in simple grey trousers tucked into short boots, the lapels of her black wide-collared jacket pierced with a single ruby-headed brooch in the shape of the Legion's icon,
to signify her position as controller of the Strategium. Her expression betrayed nothing as she looked at the most recent scanner returns and communication sweeps. She always had been cool-headed, even as an infant. There was almost no light at all. Something glittered through a crack in the rocks, providing just enough of a glow for him to make out the outline of the objects around him. There was something half buried in the rubble behind the boy, cracked and distorted by an immense impact. Shattered glass spread across the uneven floor. The light glinted from 1,086 shards. He wondered if that was important, and decided it wasn't. What was important was that the air was breathable, well within tolerable limits, and the gravity a little less than... less than what? What did Terran normal mean? His thoughts were still scattered. He understood gravity, and if asked, could have written out many long equations regarding the calculation of its strength and effect. But it was just one fragment of information tossed haphazardly across his mind, like the shining glass pieces strewn over the floor. There was quite a lot of nitrogen in the air. How did he know that? He took another deep breath and came to the same conclusion. He just knew it to be true, just as he also detected a higher concentration of carbon dioxide. Both of these facts hovered in his thoughts before a connection was made and a conclusion surfaced. An artificial atmosphere. It was by no means a definitive conclusion, but seemed a safe assumption given the other environmental factors his body had been steadily assessing in the few moments since he had awoken in this dark place. There was definitely a generator close by. He could sense the electromagnetic disturbance emitted from its coils. The source of the light strobed at a particular frequency that resonated with the generator coils. That was how he knew the light was electrically generated, which was confirmed by his analysis of the spectrum of light falling onto his enhanced retinas. It was very disturbing. He had no memory of this place at all. In fact, all he could recollect was soft warmth, some muffled background whirs and clicks, and a dull light permeating a layer of liquid. Not at all like this cold, dry, black place. And some voices, disturbing, demented voices that hovered on the edge of memory. He could not recall what they had said, but was left with an uneasy feeling of defiance and distrust. Air moisture was also quite high. Combined with the low temperature, he was forced to conclude that he was close to ice of some kind. He noticed his breath formed vaporous tendrils against the flickering gleam. He remembered his ears, surprised that he had not paid attention to them sooner. There were sounds nearby, sounds that did not seem artificial in origin, sounds that reminded him of occasional visitations while he had been growing and learning. Human sounds. Voices. He could understand the concept of language. He knew 7,641 languages, dialects, argos and cants from across the old empire. He was not sure how he knew them, and was trying to work out into which of them the words he heard could be categorized. There was something of a pansonamic lilt to the words, but their expression was harshly pronounced. He could not identify the particular substrand of the idiom, but it was not so great that he could not form a cognitive appreciation. In short, he decided what they were speaking, and listened in.
"Near 400 dead at least. 400 less mouths to feed," said another voice. "At least, that's the way they'll see it. These arc drills are not meant for ice work," said another. "This was bound to happen. Quit gossiping and start digging."
This was spat, filled with false authority. He could hear the trembling beneath the vehemence, the edge of fear that lurked in the speaker's subconscious. There came a high-pitched whining, and a flickering red light shone through the tiny gap while the rock started to vibrate fractionally more. He waited, apprehensive but intrigued. The laser drill crept closer and closer. Rock splintered and light flooded in as the chamber was breached. He took in the scene in an instant. A crowd of humans, dressed in shabby blue overalls, 7 male and 3 female, were directing the laser, 5 of them steering its head, another 5 on the tracked cart behind. Their age was indeterminate, obliterated by obvious signs of malnourishment and hard labour. Creased, leathery skin, cracked lips and sunken eyes gave them all an aged appearance that was probably beyond their chronological existence. There was also a child with them, a female infant clinging to the leg of one of the women riding on the traction cart that propelled the drill head. She had long blonde hair and a narrow face with large lips and bright blue eyes. She seemed very thin, as fragile as an icicle. She was covered in rock dust like all of the others, but had smeared it away from her forehead with a wipe of her hand, revealing skin that was unhealthily pale. Every one of them had ceased working and was now staring at him. He swiftly concluded that they had not intended to find him, and he wondered why his presence here was a surprise. It was another vexing question.
"What's stopping you?" Another male, bigger built and better fed than the others, stepped from behind the mining cart.
He wore trousers and a jacket of dark blue, covered with a film of dust. His feet were booted, the thick footwear capped with metal at toe and heel. His face was concealed behind the tinted visor of a helmet, and in his hand he carried a whip, whose handle was heavy enough to serve as a cudgel. The man stopped in his tracks, as he also saw what was in the pocket chamber that had been breached.
"How the—"
The adults, the ones in the coveralls with the tools, started jabbering amongst themselves, almost too fast for him to understand. The one with the whip, the one with the false authority in his voice, pushed to the front. The small girl had dropped down from the cart and was walking through the breach into the chamber.
"Get back,"
said the uniformed man, snatching hold of the girl's hair to drag her from the gap. He decided he did not like the man with the whip. The girl's shriek was full of pain and fear, cutting through his thoughts like a hot knife touching a nerve. He stood up and walked towards the group. They backed away from him, still whispering and muttering in fear. The man who had hurt the girl stood his ground, pushing the infant aside. The man lunged forwards to grab him, but he moved so slowly it was easy to avoid the outstretching hand. The boy nimbly stepped around the flailing grasp of the guard and grabbed the wrist in both hands. It snapped easily, bringing a howl of pain from the man. The bullying man reared up as his shattered hand flopped loosely at the end of his arm, bringing back the whip in the other. The barbed tip of the lash cracked forwards, but it was a simple enough matter to elude it and snatch up the end of the whip in his fist. The man laughed, partly in hysteria, and yanked, trying to unbalance him. The boy spread his legs and held firm, jarring the guard's arm, before pulling back. Rather than release his grip, the guard was hauled from his feet, landing face first in the dust and rocks in front of the others. Pacing forwards, the boy saw the look of surprise, terror, and hope in the eyes of the workers. The little girl smiled at him, even as tears streaked the grime on her face. He wanted to make her happy, to give her something as a sign that everything would be all right.
"What's your name?" she asked. "Mine is Nasturi. Nasturi Afrania."
He grabbed the helmeted head of the guard, twisted, and gave a pull, ripping it free. He offered it up to the girl, who laughed, even as the adult started to cry out in panic. He saw himself reflected in the visor and realized the reason for the alarm he had caused. He was nude and clothed in the body of a child no older than Afrania. Blood was spattered across his snow-white skin, his crimson-splashed face framed with a shock of coal-black hair. His eyes were utterly black, darker than night. He searched for an answer to the girl's question as blood dribbled down his naked arms. Only one reply seemed appropriate, drawn up from the depths of embryonic memory.
19, he said. "I am number 19.
"Nothing detected, Lord," Afrania reported. "A little background echo on the Therian frequencies, but nothing less than 5 days old."
"Enemy?" asked Korax, one hand gripping the back of the command throne.
6 more frigate-sized vessels detected, Lord," reported Afrania. 2 strike cruisers and 1 battle cruiser, all using word-bearers' protocols as far as we can determine. They're moving out system."
"It's too dangerous to remain here," Agapito said from the gallery. "That makes it 38 vessels detected in proximity to Istvan IV. The Therians are gone," said Solaro.
"I have to concur."
Valerius's voice was quiet, his face pinched with emotion. He darted a sideways glance at Bran and then returned his gaze to the Primarch.
"I hope their sacrifice will be remembered.
I will provide a list of ranks and names when we have returned to Deliverance.
They will be lauded. Have no worry in that regard, Korax assured him.
The Primarch's dark eyes glittered in the glow of the screens that covered the walls and station panels of the Strategium.
Their loss will not go unremembered, nor will it go unavenged.
My thanks, Lord Korax, Valerius said with a deep bow.
A dull tone sounded from one of the main speakers.
Reactor energy spike, Lord, said Ephrania.
Reduce scanning array output to navigational, the Primarch replied quickly. There is nothing more we will find here. Adjust course to shortest route to translation distance, evasion pattern 3.
The black and white clad serfs moved to their control stations without word, and within a minute the warning tone fell quiet.
Auger sweeps being targeted to our vicinity, Lord, said Ephrania, her words quick but calm. Three frigates have changed bearing, moving ahead of our position, monitoring increase in closed communications traffic.
The traitors smell something amiss, said Korax.
He strode across the Strategium to join the controller and looked at the display screens.
Keep to plotted course. Reflex shield status.
Ephrania consulted a subscreen before replying,
Masking is at 99.3%, Lord, she told the Primarch. Should we slow down?
Korax performed some quick calculations in his head, factoring the scanner ranges of the enemy vessels and the time required to get away.
No change, he commanded. A little more speed will serve us better than complete masking. When we are 200,000 kilometers from the enemy, increase speed by 20%. We should be at the translation point in 7 days.
The Primarch looked again at the displays, seeing in his mind's eye the dispositions of the enemy fleet. They had quickly thrown up a blockade position around the inner planets, correctly expecting him to have headed in-system rather than directly out of the star's gravity well. Korax reminded himself that his enemies were commanded by Horus, one of the greatest strategists of the Imperium. His traitorous brother knew well the capabilities of the Raven Guard, having benefited greatly from their expertise during his campaigns. They would have to be careful and take nothing for granted. The Raven Guard might have been pulled from the trap on Istvan V, but they were still far from safe. In a darkened chamber, close to the Strategium of the Vengeful Spirit, a meeting was being held. The room was large, big enough for several dozen occupants to be seated, the light of the single great lantern hanging from the centre of the ceiling barely reaching the banner-hung walls. A few data stations blinked with ruddy lights on the far wall beneath an embroidered standard depicting the Eye of Horus in gold on burgundy. The floor was plain plasteel mesh, scuffed to a dull grey by the countless footfalls of booted feet. As the door closed behind Alpharius, the Primarch's eyes instantly adjusted to the gloom. The space seemed cavernous, occupied by only three others. Alpharius was surprised. He had been expecting several of his brother Primarchs to be attending the council. As he stepped forwards, he realized that this was not a war council. It was an impromptu interrogation. Perhaps even a trial. The thought did not sit comfortably with him as he regarded the chamber's other occupants with what he hoped was an impassive expression. Alpharius knew that he tested the patience of the War Master, and here at the heart of his lair there was no telling what he might do. Horus, War Master, Primarch of the Lunar Wolves, the Sons of Horus, Alpharius corrected himself, sat on a broad, high-backed throne, robed in heavy black and purple, hands on his knees. His face was heavily shadowed, eyes hooded with darkness with just a glint of their core. Even seated, the War Master's presence dominated the room. Alpharius had spent time with Horus before, when loyal to the Emperor and since, and never before had he felt threatened. This time was different. Horus seemed bigger than ever. Alpharius was the smallest of the Primarchs, but had not allowed this to undermine his confidence. Now that he looked at Horus, tree trunk thick arms stretching the fabric of his robes, Alpharius realized that his fellow Primarch could crush him, tear him limb from limb, without warning. Their relationship had changed, that much was clear. The Primarchs had once been brothers, equals. When Horus had been made War Master, he had been treated as the first amongst equals. Looking at Horus now,
Alpharius was left with no doubt that Horus considered himself master, a lord to whom fealty was owed. The obedience of his co-conspirators was no longer demanded. It was expected. There was also no mistaking the War Master's perception of his role in the coming meeting. He was the judge at a trial. His eyes remained fixed on Alpharius as the Primarch walked to the center of the room. The gloomy surrounds, the half-lit shapes at the edge of vision, were a crude trick, Alpharius told himself, only capable of intimidating lesser individuals. For all that, the Primarch of the Alpha Legion felt a cold trickle of uncertainty creeping through his gut. At the War Master's right shoulder stood First Captain Abaddon, fully armored and with a power sword at his hip. He had a look that matched his reputation. His hard eyes were those of a stone-hearted killer. At the War Master's left was the word-bearer Erebus, his armor painted a lavish crimson, adorned with golden sigils, and hung with fluttering pieces of parchment covered with tiny scrawls of Lorgar's meandering litanies. The word-bearer leaned closer and whispered something in Horus's ear, so quiet even Alpharius's superhuman hearing could not detect it. The War Master looked sharply at the Primarch of the Alpha Legion, eyes narrowing.
"It would be unwise to take my name in vain, Alpharius," said Horus, fingers tightening with anger. "You claimed my authority and misled Angron and his World Eaters, allowing Korax and his legion to escape."
"Perhaps your conversion to our cause is less than complete,"
added Erebus, before Alpharius could reply. The Alpha Legion's Primarch held his tongue for the moment, quickly adjusting his demeanor in the face of Horus's hostility. He stood in front of the War Master, helm under one arm, head bowed in obeisance, the picture of the diffident servant. Abaddon put his hand to the hilt of his sword and growled.
"Your duplicitous nature is well known," said the captain, teeth bared in anger. "The War Master saw fit to bring you into the light of his plans. I hope you have not made a mockery of his fair judgment."
"I seek to place Horus on the throne of Terra, the same as you," replied Alpharius, lowering to one knee in deference. It was an instinctive reaction, though such submission grated at the Primarch's pride. "If I acted out of turn, it is only because circumstance forced me to make a decision quickly."
"I have not yet heard an explanation for your actions," said Horus.
The War Master's gaze was piercing, as if trying to bore into the Primarch's mind to see his thoughts. Alpharius matched the stare without fear. Horus knew nothing of the Alpha Legion's true aims. If he had any inkling of the part made out for him by the Cabal, Alpharius would already be dead.
"I consider it a grave crime to usurp my authority, a crime compounded by the severity of the consequences."
"The Raven Guard have not yet been apprehended,"
said Erebus, a sneer twisting his lips.
"Though but a shadow of their former strength, it was foolish to allow them to escape."
"You must trust me,"
said Alpharius, ignoring the two legionaries, his attention focused on his brother Primarch. It was the War Master's will or whim that needed to be swayed to Alpharius's cause.
"The military potential of the Raven Guard has been expended. They are no physical threat. Their survival, Korax's escape, will play a greater role in this war we have unleashed."
"Will it?"
Abaddon spat the words, his scorn etched into the creases of his brow.
"What greater role?"
Alpharius kept his gaze on the War Master, noting that his displeasure did not seem so deep. It was clear that he did not have Horus's full trust, but Alpharius did not care for that. His brothers had always been wary of the Alpha Legion, always suspicious of their methods, if not their motives. Horus was no different. He had consistently underestimated the power of subterfuge, eschewing the subtler weapons of espionage and misdirection in favor of overt action. Alpharius had not answered the War Master's summons to excuse his actions. He had come to persuade Horus of their merit. That he could do so without the interference of the other Legion commanders was an advantage.
"The Alpha Legion have infiltrated the Raven Guard," Alpharius said bluntly.
He saw Horus's eyes widen slightly with surprise and suppressed an expression of pleasure at the War Master's nonplussed moment. Far from an admission of guilt, it was a declaration of strength, the unveiling of a weapon that the Alpha Legion kept hidden. Alpharius could see the calculation behind the War Master's eyes. If the Alpha Legion could infiltrate the Raven Guard, they could have done the same to any legion. The War Master cocked his head to one side, momentarily perturbed, his eyes flicking away from Alpharius for the first time since he had entered, glancing at Abaddon.
"To what purpose?"
asked Taurus, recovering his composure, his stare returning to its previous intensity.
"Had they been destroyed, what would be the point of spying on corpses?"
"You allowed Korax to get away from the World Eaters to protect your operatives."
Erebus levelled the accusation with a pointed finger, pushing Alpharius's patience beyond its limit.
"I am a Primarch, Genitor of the Alpha Legion, and you will show me due respect," snapped Alpharius, standing up.
He took two steps towards Erebus, eyes glittering. Abaddon moved to intercept him, half drawing his blade.
"Don't make the mistake of letting that sword leave its scabbard," said Alpharius, fixing Abaddon with a venomous glare. "I may prefer to work in subtle ways, but if you continue to insult me, I will slay you here and now."
Horus held out a hand, waving Abaddon back, a thin smile on the War Master's face. He seemed pleased at Alpharius's anger.
"You are somewhat defensive, my brother,"
he said, gesturing for Alpharius to seat himself on one of the chairs arranged around the throne.
"Please explain to me the benefits of allowing Korax to escape."
Alpharius sat down, reluctantly accepting the War Master's invitation, darting a warning look at Erebus just as the word-bearer opened his mouth to speak.
"Save your posturing for those that are swayed by it," said Alpharius. "Your change of loyalty proves the vacuity of your proselytizing. You are privileged to stand in the presence of your betters and should know not to speak until spoken to."
The Primarch enjoyed the contortions of anger that racked the first chaplain's face, but Erebus heeded the warning and said nothing.
"I have good information that Korax will attempt to return to Terra," Alpharius said, turning his attention back to Horus. "He will entreat the aid of the Emperor and be given access to some secret of old night that we can use to our advantage."
"From where does this good information come?"
asked Horus, affecting disinterest, though Alpharius could see that the War Master was intrigued.
"We each have our own means and sources," replied Alpharius, flicking a meaningful gaze towards Erebus.
The Alpha Legion had made it their business to know as much as possible about their fellow conspirators, and Alpharius was well aware of the strange rituals that Lorgar and his word-bearers now indulged in. The Alpha Legion's allies in the Cabal had furnished them with much information concerning the Primordial Annihilator, the power of chaos. It would not hurt to pretend that the word-bearers were not the only legion who had influence with the powers of the warp.
"I am not of a mind to share mine with you at the moment."
"Are you not?" said Horus, irritated. "Why would you keep secrets from me?"
"Perhaps it is just my nature to do so. Secrecy is my best weapon."
Alpharius smiled apologetically and gave a slight shrug.
"Also, I do not believe myself or my legion indispensable in your endeavours, so it would be unwise to surrender the few small advantages I possess. I know that my behaviour in the past and in recent times does not engender trust, but I assure you that this information is not only legitimate, but accurate."
"I will accept your assurances," said Horus, "for the moment."
He leaned back in his throne, visibly relaxing as if to back up his words. Alpharius knew not to be lured into a sense of security. The War Master's temper might change at a wrong answer from him or a sly word from Erebus.
"What is your intent?"
"We will allow Korax to obtain whatever it is he seeks and then take it from him, turning it to our purpose."
"How do you think your operatives will remain undetected?" Abaddon asked. "Our reports show that less than 4,000 Raven Guard fled from Angron.
New faces will be easily spotted. Your legionary is exposed.
That is why they wear old faces, Alpharius told him. He smiled and explained further when the others' frowns deepened. The Raven Guard were scattered as they fled the massacre at the drop site. It was several days before they convened their strength again, during which time many were cut down in pursuit, and anarchy reigned through their organization. It was no simple matter for my apothecaries to transplant the facial features of several fallen Raven Guard onto volunteers from my legion. But they have had a lot of practice. As you may have heard, such facial surgery is not uncommon in the ranks of the Alpha Legion. My warriors are skilled and experienced, able to blend in without attracting attention. Even now they are with the Raven Guard, waiting for the opportunity to report.
You stole their faces?
Abaddon's expression was a mixture of incredulity and disgust. Alpharius nodded and looked for Horus's reaction. For a moment the War Master had the same guarded look as earlier, but his aggression swept it aside as he leaned forwards, brow furrowing.
You are sure of their success?
Asked Horus, the words laden with accusation.
You have heard from them since they began their infiltration?
Alpharius hesitated at this question, not sure of his reply. There was no point lying at this stage, even though the truth might upset the War Master further. They have not yet been in contact, Alpharius admitted. It is possible that they have been discovered, or perhaps slain in the fighting, but it is unlikely. They will send word when there is something of note to report.
That will be a feat in itself, considering how far away they might be, said Abaddon.
As I said before, I have my means. Saying nothing, Horus regarded Alpharius for some time, his shadow-hidden eyes never leaving the face of the Alpha Legion Primarch. Erebus bent down to say something, but the War Master held up a hand to stop him.
You should have come to me with this intelligence before you interfered with the World Eaters,
Horus said, his voice quiet. Alpharius chose not to repeat his point that he had had no such time to seek the War Master's authority and certainly didn't voice his view that permission would not have been given. The judge was about to pronounce his judgment, and Alpharius could not tell which humours held sway over the War Master. He held his breath, trying not to tense, lest his anxiety was seen as guilt.
Angron has been given further cause to doubt my commands, and he is not shy in voicing his displeasure. I do not appreciate your scheming, brother, and I will be watching you closely.
Which meant that no action more imminent would be taken against the Alpha Legion. Alpharius breathed out slowly, still on his guard.
We have a possible contact with a Raven Guard vessel heading out system from Istvan IV, War Master, said Abaddon. Should we call off the pursuit, if it is your desire to let them escape?
Horus looked to Alpharius, one eyebrow raised, seeking his opinion, though Alpharius sensed he was still being tested. I would humbly suggest that the pursuit continues as normal for the moment, said the Primarch. Korax may already be suspicious of the events that allowed him to elude the World Eaters. Any further deficiency in our attempts to bring him to battle might cause him to act with greater caution, and ultimately thwart the reasons for allowing the Raven Guard their freedom.
I concur, said Horus. I have every confidence in Korax's ability to escape my clutches without further help, and it will cause further consternation and questions amongst our allies if I am seen to interfere again.
A wise decision, said Alpharius, bowing his head. If there is nothing more to discuss, I must return to my legion and continue the operation. Horus signaled for Alpharius to depart, and the Primarch felt the War Master's heavy gaze on his back as he walked towards the door. The hydraulically locked doorway remained closed to him, but Alpharius did not turn around. The murmur of Erebus hovered on the edge of Alpharius's hearing as the Primarch waited for the portal to open.
If I thought for a moment, brother, that you were working against me, I would destroy you
and your legion,
Horus declared. Alpharius looked over his shoulder at the War Master and his two advisers.
I have never doubted that, brother.
The door hissed open in front of Alpharius, and he stepped out of the Star Chamber, trembling at the experience. When Alpharius had left, Abaddon asked leave of his War Master.
Wait a moment, Ezekiel,
said Horus. His gaze moved between Abaddon and Erebus.
If the Alpha Legion have managed to infiltrate the Raven Guard, I believe they will have no compunction about doing the same to their allies. We have already suffered from disloyalty. I will allow no further disruption. Erebus, send word to Lorgar before he leaves for Kalth. I want more of his apostles spread through our forces. Ezekiel, conduct a thorough security review of our protocols and report anything directly to me. Conduct any further purges as required.
What of Alpharius? Asked Erebus. He plays a game with us, of that I am sure.
He follows his own agenda, that much is certain, replied the War Master.
He stood up, dwarfing the two legionaries.
I am equally certain that we will never have definitive proof of treachery. What is the current position of his battle barge?
The Alpha is in orbit over Istvan III, said Abaddon. Should I assign a ship or two to watch them?
Yes, said Horus, and pass on my command that the Alpha is to join my fleet when we leave the system. Let us keep Alpharius on a tight leash for the moment, until we see how his scheme plays out.
When he had returned to the Alpha, Alpharius headed straight for his personal chambers. The meeting with Horus had unsettled him, more than he had expected. He wondered if it would be simpler to reveal the existence of the Cabal to the War Master if Horus knew of the ancient Pan-Alien conglomeration that had persuaded Alpharius to side against the Emperor. The loyalty of the Alpha Legion would not be in doubt, and they would have more freedom to pursue their goals. In the longer term, that knowledge raised other questions. Questions whose answers would be counterproductive, and Alpharius always took the long view. The Cabal had shown him Horus's self-destruction after the War Master's victory over the Emperor, ultimately sparing the galaxy from the eternal threat of the Primordial Annihilator. This outcome had to remain a secret. If that knowledge were to be revealed, Horus would be forewarned, and it would not come to pass, meaning the Alpha Legion's treason against the Emperor would be for nothing. As they had done so many times before, Alpharius and his legion had stepped upon a narrow path, playing a part to two opposing sides, to achieve a third, more desirable outcome. One distraction, one wrong step, would see them utterly isolated and most likely destroyed. These thoughts occupied Alpharius as he made his way along the dimly lit corridors of his battle barge. The massive vessel seemed empty, and he passed only a few of the Legion's human serfs and half-mechanical servitors. They bowed their heads in deference to their master, as befitted one of the Alpha Legion, but were unaware that he was the Primarch. His appearance was nondescript, and his movements, like those of all of his warriors, were ever masked in distraction and diversion, so that his whereabouts were never certain even to those under his command. Most of the Alpha Legion was still on Istvan V, where they had taken part in the massacre at the drop site, destroying the Iron Hands, Salamanders, and Raven Guard, fighting alongside the other legions who had thrown in their lot with Horus. It had been a subterfuge worthy of Alpharius's twisted schemes, but there had been survivors, and news of Horus's great betrayal was surely spreading. The Alpha Legion would act as the War Master's eyes and ears across the galaxy, keeping watch not only on those remnants that still backed the Emperor, but also on those legions that had sworn loyalty to Horus. According to the Cabal, there was a balance to be achieved. Horus must be victorious, but his hold on power precarious enough to precipitate the implosion of the traitor forces after the victory. This would result in the destruction of the traitors that Alpharius had already begun to engineer.
In keeping with Alfarius's usual appearance as a normal legionary, his chambers were just one of the many assigned to the legion captains normally aboard the Alpha. A nondescript metal door in a side passage marked the entrance to his personal chambers. According to the small nameplate beside the door, they were the rooms assigned to Captain Nimming, a conceit of an ancient dead Terran language that Alfarius found as amusing as it was useful. When more of his legion was on board, several different individuals would use the quarters, according to secret rota, and there were other such blind chambers on the other ships of the fleet. With such methods, Alfarius could move amongst his legion without drawing attention to his presence. Alfarius punched in the lock code, and the door slid open, revealing a small, wood-panelled antechamber just a few strides across, leading to another sealed portal. He locked the outer door behind him and checked the security log terminal hidden behind one of the timbers, assuring himself that none of the chamber's other pseudo-captains had returned to the battle barge yet. Entering the cipher for the second door, Alfarius entered the quarters proper. Three linked rooms, furnished sparingly with old Terran cabinets, chairs and tables of nondescript origin. The floor was carpeted with a dark red, the plascrete bulkheads obscured behind more wooden panelling. In the main chamber were three high-backed couches, reinforced to support the weight of several legionaries. The archway to the right led to the sleeping chambers, but it was to the left that Alfarius turned first, to the arming room. The Primarch did not divest himself fully of his armour. Such a thing required the attendance of several serfs, and he was not prepared to let anyone else into the chambers while he still had his secret visitor on board. The room was plain, save for the weapons racks on the walls and the steel stand for his armour. An alcove in one wall contained two automated mechanical arms. He backed into this space and activated the backpack removal system. With a hiss of disengaging cables and crackle of detaching power conduits, his backpack was lifted from his armour, turned 180 degrees, and plugged into a recharging port at the back of the alcove, linked to the Alpha's energy grid. With this completed, Alfarius took off his helm and shoulder guards and placed them on the armour stand. He removed his gauntlets, vam braces and elbow guards and locked them in place too, before removing the outer greaves protecting his lower legs. He had eschewed his more formal ceremonial garb for the audience with Horus. This particular suit of armour was the same as that issued to many of his legionaries, bearing no symbols that would mark out Alfarius as anything other than an ordinary warrior of the Alpha Legion. Painted with several coats of blue over the bare ceramite, it was the third such suit Alfarius had possessed on board the Alpha, though he had others on several different vessels, each identical to this. The first had been abandoned on Thiachin, after anti-compliance forces had compromised Alfarius's desert bunker complex and the Primarch had been forced to retreat without it. The second had been half-destroyed during fighting against orcs on Actur 318, and the battle damage had rendered it easily identifiable. This suit had lasted for 12 years so far, but Alfarius's meticulous maintenance and attention to the replenishment of the livery and insignia meant that it was as flawless as the day the artificers had created it. There was not a scratch, burr, mark, dent, or even brushstroke that marked it out as exceptional. Not a detail that might be used to identify Alfarius amongst the other warriors of the Legion.
"I sense a presence."
The clipped false tones of his guest's translating device sounded from the sleeping chamber. Alfarius, now divested of much of his armour, crossed the main room quickly and entered the bunk room. The Cabal's emissary hovered at the foot of the low bunk. At first glance, it appeared to be a glass sphere no larger than his palm, filled with swirling yellow and green gases, several digital devices attached to the globe without any obvious pattern. Looking more closely, one could see the creature itself inside its artificial habitat. It looked like a tiny skeletal hand, with seven fingers and no thumb, its sensory organs dark, shimmering lines against the brittle, pale flesh of its body. Its true name was unpronounceable, its gender uncertain, but Alfarius thought of the alien as a him, due to the thin, reedy voice emitted by the translator, and referred to the creature by the approximate name of Athithitir. Bubbles formed in the gas, though from what orifice Alfarius was not sure, and the translator emitter set at the bottom of the globe rattled into life.
I sense you have met the War Master.
Horus has allowed us to continue with the infiltration of the Raven Guard, said the Primarch. Everything will proceed as we have discussed.
I sense that you are not being forthright.
Alpharius suppressed a growl of annoyance. Athithatir had some kind of empathic ability, which even his Primarch mind could not block. The envoy had introduced itself as an Antedil, and mentioned a gas giant homeworld somewhere on the rim in the galactic north. Its psychic sense had developed under the crushing pressure and intense gravity of such a planet, where normal senses and limbs would have been inadequate.
Horus is suspicious, that is all, said Alpharius. He will need to be handled carefully. I sense reticence. Your role is clear. Horus must win this war outright. The primordial annihilator gathers strength. It is linked to the War Master now. Rituals are being performed, and creatures summoned from the...
The translator let out a stream of incomprehensible, high-pitched sounds.
From the warp, you mean, said Alpharius. Such a short word for such a complex phenomenon.
Creatures are being summoned from the warp? You mean demons, yes?
Alpharius sat on the end of the bunk, and the environment globe lowered, floating level with the Primarch's face, just out of reach. Different coloured bubbles flashed in the depths.
Wheels are turning. Traps are being laid. Your brothers, loyal to the Emperor, will face their darkest foes. They must fall.
So you have said before. For the moment we must wait to find out what Korax will do, and if your prophecies are true.
Not prophecies. Accurate. True. The Raven will meet the Emperor, and he will be given a gift that can change the course of the coming war. This must be destroyed.
It seems such a waste to destroy this gift, said Alpharius.
He stood up and paced to the door, before turning to look at Athithatir.
I think it would be better in the hands of the Alpha Legion than turned to scrap.
That is not what we agreed. I insist that you remember our agreement. The device and the Raven Guard will be destroyed. The plan must continue.
I think not, said Alpharius. Already my twin brother Omegon is on Kieva, the world around which Deliverance orbits. We have allies amongst the people there, old foes of Korax who do not like their new Mechanicum masters and who strive for independence from the Imperium. Rest assured, the Raven Guard will be destroyed, but not before Omegon claims this prize for the Alpha Legion.
The alien's words came out as a flutter of untranslatable mechanical shrieks, and its glow bobbed up and down in agitation, the gas roiling within.
Settle yourself, said Alpharius with a laugh. We wouldn't want you to break on something, would we?
Your dishonesty will be communicated to the Cabal.
When I have the prize in my hands, and Horus is one step closer to overthrowing the Emperor, we shall see if the Cabal disapproves of my action, said Alpharius as he stepped out of the bunk chamber. Until then, you can keep your opinions to yourself.
He hit the lock switch on the bedroom door, cutting off Athithatir's enraged metallic screech. Everything had been set in motion, and now came the hardest part. Waiting. Waiting for his counterpart on Kievar, his twin Omegon, to make contact with the anti-imperial forces on the Forge World. Waiting for his operatives within the Raven Guard to make themselves known to Omegon. Alpharius sat on one of the couches, elbows on knees, fingers steepled at his chin, as his mind went over the plan as it stood. With Horus now set up to play his part, there was nothing to interfere with the smooth enactment of the Alpha Legion scheme. Everything would pan out as Alpharius had envisaged.